Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The main team.
QNL.
With guest co-host.
Peng Chi. Wait. Dan, do you realize that you have exactly 1,337 posts right now?
What, on CFC?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Now you better not post anymore.
Oh, that's awesome. I can never post again.
No podcast does it. It's screw that. You can stay weak forever.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 147. I am Peng Chi, and this is my first time here. And I am joined by Dan Q.
Spoiler alert, I'm me.
Turns out he is indeed him. Makalua.
Seriously.
The Mian team.
Masterfully debating the technical difficulties.
And in addition, he is using long-distance minutes to join us, so give him your extra bonus props. Welcome, please, QNL, Lisa.
This better not be recorded, too.
Some other guy, Matt Chin, I guess.
Hey.
Where's my damn caffeine?
Surprise, surprise, there's been some new information about the Civilization V Expansion Pack Gods and Kings release since we last recorded an episode.
What?
Just a little bit.
It's like they're preparing for a release or something.
No.
This has been summarized. A lot of the information has been summarized in an article on CFC, and there was also a video preview. We're going to have some audio from that, but really at this point, I think it's just to summarize. The number of previews that we have seen, we are getting information from combinations of 1UP, Destructoid, GamesRadar, GameSpy, GameSpot, Kotaku, VentureBeat, Verge, and the Washington Post. This is like, okay, one of these does not belong, yet it does somehow.
Best part is it was part of their business page for that week.
You know, it's a slow news day when...
To my fellow panelists, where do we want to start with the new information?
I always like starting with Byzantium, and given that we had no information about them prior to, like, this week, I am excited once again to have Cataphracts. Those are my favorite units in Civ 4, because I can just walk around killing everybody, and they are coming back. We don't know much about them, unfortunately, but we do know they're there, and that's the important.
They're there. They'll scare you.
Yes, the Cataphract presumably replacing the knight unit.
Eh, or horse. You never know. They like messing around with, you know, this should be here, but it's not.
That is true. And Cataphracts were particularly known for their extremely heavy armor, so probably something, some defensive bonus or something, or maybe just a basic boring strength bonus.
Yeah, well, I guess it'll depend on how good the unique ability is and how good the drummon is. You know, it's a balance thing. Not everything can be super awesome with special promotions that keep around.
The Romans were our very, you know, classical era, like, go kill everyone right now. And the Byzantines seem like they've got the same kind of two unique units, you know, ready to go kick some ass, but they're in two different eras this time. Maybe the idea here is to make it a slightly more drawn out, slightly less pronounced dominance militarily.
Possible. I mean, the Byzantine Empire came from the ashes of the Eastern Roman Empire, so it makes sense that they're not going to be powerful at the exact same time.
Other civilizations with information revealed, since we're talking about Byzantium, we might as well stay with new civs. The Celtic unique ability was revealed called Druidic Lore, and with that, your cities will generate more faith near unimproved forests. I think we knew before that their unique unit was the Pictish Warrior, but now we also know that it receives a combat bonus outside of friendly territory, pillaging costs, no movement for this unit, and it receives faith equal to half the enemy's strength upon eliminating an enemy unit, which was the most interesting reveal to me, because that's not something we've seen before in a unit. Seeing as how we haven't had faith before gods and kings, you could say, well, of course, yeah, we haven't seen that before. But don't kill the buzz here.
Yeah, also, I don't know if we've ever seen well, this gets a bonus equal to half in, like, all of the Civ series, come to think of it.
Aztec Jags. Well, the Aztecs, period.
Yeah, compared to culture.
Yeah, although that ended up getting doubled eventually.
Yeah.
it started at half, then got boosted.
It didn't. You're right.
So maybe down the line they'll decide that they should boost it?
I don't know. Faith points seem a lot more valuable than culture points.
Yeah, probably.
Especially early game, although I guess this won't be that early.
So these seem potent. Slap yourself down beside a forest, get your early Pantheon very quickly, get dowed by three or four AIs, slap up your Pictus warriors, gain a ton of faith, get a religion, go kill them.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, they're like a weird Aztec foreign legion Viking. All in one unit, allegedly at bronze working, which I am shocked about.
I wouldn't be that shocked. I mean, it's got pointy sticks.
Well, yeah, but 11 strength at bronze working. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous.
Depends on the power of the spearmen now. We've already seen that they've been adjusting the basic unit's combat strengths. So as long as it's within range, I mean, you can kind of say if this is a unique version of the spearmen, then the spearmen can't be that far off 11.
No, the GameSpy article seems to indicate that the spearmen's strength is 10.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's sensible.
Yeah. Which means that the swordsman is probably more than that.
I think swordsman, I think I have at 14.
Probably something along that line.
The Celts also get a unique building. It is unlocked by acoustics and provides culture, happiness, and a great artist slot.
Pronounced Katie.
Really don't know how that's going to play into everything else. It's speculated that we might replace the Opera House, but is not sure yet. Well, there's lots of speculation, so...
Yay, speculation.
That's what we do best. That's what we as Civ fans do, especially the really diehard Civ fans. Now, you could argue that if you're a Civ player, you're a diehard gamer anyway because of how deep you have to get into the game for it to have any meaning and how long you have to spend, etc., etc. But to dissect not only, of course, articles, but that's often not where we get a lot of these particular details, but it's from screenshot analysis beyond what would seem to be normal. Assuming, of course, that screenshot analysis is normal, then the detail we go into is abnormal. So add layer upon layer of geekiness, and that is us. Who else? Oh, the Maya. Their unique ability seems to involve the Maya long count bonus at certain intervals. The bonus may include great people. There's also a unique building, the pyramid, apparently, but there's nothing really known about it. Well, it's a unique building, and it's a pyramid. What more do you want to know right now? Jeez.
You build it, and it comes.
Exactly.
You know, I kind of secretly hope that it replaces the granary, like in, remember Civ 1, where the pyramids for some reason gave you a granary in every city?
Oh, the wonder, yeah. Austria, their unique ability is to spend gold to annex or puppet an allied city-state. Now, I think we mentioned that before, now that I think about it. Together with that, their unique unit is the Hussar, and their unique building is the Coffee House. Coffee House, and I know right away this is the unique building for Mackie, but the stats are not yet known.
I kind of wonder how useful that unique ability will be, though, just because currently, at least, you very rarely want to annex a city-state. I mean, like, you'd much rather have the bonus from being their ally most of the time, and I wonder how much that will change in the expansion, and then how useful that ability might be.
I guess I could see it from the perspective of if there is another Civ on the map, has spent heavily between gold and, you know, the quests we've been hearing about, etc., that if you realize, well, I could either spend, you know, try to get all these other quests to catch up or spend all this gold to catch up to become friends and get rid of this allied status. And before even we get into the espionage system where you can rig elections, perhaps this could be a way to say, oh, was that your city-state? Yoink. In other words, if I can't have that bonus from that city-state, nobody will.
Pretty much. And some city-states are, you know, right there on your border. You could end up with an AI that has, like, 10, 12, 14 city-state allies, but you want to go beat them up, and they've got city-states all around you. Well, it's generally safer to remove them before getting into that fight. And hey, if you can just get their stuff, why not?
So, yes, now for the first time in Civ, you can get married.
Yay. Waifu.
And another reason not to need this so-called real life. Wait, what? And then as for other civilizations, neither the Aztec nor the Spanish unique ability will be changed to fit the gods and king religious theme. And honestly, there's enough balancing going on here. I think it's just as well that the unique ability is not being changed. I like how the Netherlandish unique ability has also been clarified. I like Netherlandish. In this summary thread, I never thought of Netherlandish before, but the return on happiness is 50% from luxuries traded to other civilizations.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That sounds like it'll be really, really strong, you know, on your deity strategies, these, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, look, I can sell all of my luxuries just like I do in vanilla, but I get half that back. Whee!
Sounds like it'll be pretty strong.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty strong, but the funny part was people were still fighting, saying, oh, no, it should be 100%, because 50% is too weak.
Yeah, we needed another reason to make the Arabians look like one of the worst civs.
Must buff everything.
We need a global warming back in.
I'm just looking forward to the start where you're playing as the Netherlands and you're on a continent by yourself. See how much you like the ability then, guys. Yeah.
Pretty much all of their abilities would be garbage if you're stuck by yourself. Oh yeah, I have a unit that can raid people.
Naval combat. Melee naval units attack land units on the coast.
That surprised me.
I don't know if it can. I haven't really believed that statement. And this comes back to what you were talking about, the screenshots and the reviews. I think most Civ Fanatics and Poly forum members are smart enough to look at the screenshots, look at the videos, make our own decisions about what changed and stuff like that, but then completely ignore what the reviewer wrote because it's usually full of crap.
Well, I think that I can almost imagine the thought process that led to melee naval units being allowed to attack land units. They were like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Let's not do that. And then they were like, wait a minute, why would I ever build a trireme again?
Early defense versus barbs?
Versus barbarian triremes? I mean, or I could just build an archer.
Yeah, yeah. That too. Well, okay, this is a realism argument, but I'm sorry. You're not going to take your trireme and jam it a couple hundred miles into land.
Well, if you wanted to try to justify it, you could just say, well, triremes had, like, legions on them, basically, and they're just getting off the boat and going and killing the guy.
Build a real
or
legion.
Yeah, imagine it's just like the militia that are on the boats in Civilization Revolution.
Those things couldn't fight.
That's like that.
It's just an extension.
I think it's highly suspect. It sounds dumb. Being able to take your destroyer and ram it against people standing on the coastline. What are they doing? Are they just lining up on the coast going, hey, everybody, come get us?
I know, I like the idea of the destroyer literally ramming the coastline and just running down infantry that are there.
Oh, come on, guys, you've heard of Transformers, you know?
That's the mysterious last unit. That was a Transformer.
Speaking still of combat, perhaps in the more believable department, catapult apparent bonus versus cities is plus 200%.
That seems highly suspect.
From what I remember, their strength way, way, way down. Like,
yeah, I think they're about, it's 8 range strength plus 200% versus cities. It was actually in a German article, came out like in the last 2 days.
Remember that this is in the context of spearmen having 10 strength, and the catapult has 8.
Yep.
Well, it does reflect how terrible they were as steel weapons back in the day.
Quick, drop rocks on them.
For later siege, too, or after Trebuchet, this is historically it used to. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we've only seen the catapult. We haven't seen the trebuchet or the cannon or the artillery. But some people are already extrapolating.
If the cannon and artillery had better range strength and the trebuchet and catapult had this with low range strength with the bonus against cities.
I wouldn't be too surprised if the artillery was the same as the catapult, where it's a good bonus versus cities. Because, I mean, really, it's like, ooh, artillery is there. Walk that way. Get out of the way. they were fairly effective at pounding fortifications, but you wouldn't really use it out in the field. Like, you wouldn't drag an artillery piece all over the planet trying to blast individual units that can just move.
Yeah.
Still, the field artillery is very good. Well, starting from cannons, historically, you could just mow people down with that, especially in entrenched positions. They're really nasty. And I would hate to see them go the way of catapults where, you know, you have about as much accuracy as a big friggin' rock, and you're not dropping anything. That's not, I guess, from a gameplay standpoint, how do you push into a row of artillery? It's not too easy, but still.
Well, it does look like, at least with the catapults, it looks like their melee strength is actually going to be a lot more favorable compared to other current era units. So, like, the catapult is strength 7 against the spearmen at 10. So, like, an entrenched catapult actually would be kind of effective against a spearman. It wouldn't go down in one hit.
Yeah.
It'll be able it's to not that back.
Oh, no, when I said entrenched, I meant, like, just a row of artillery with something in front of them. Pushing into that would just be obnoxious in vanilla. Unless you have air power or nukes, whatever. But
yeah.
If you're just running a land force and trying to get into that, that's not going to be pleasant.
Oh, no, in vanilla, yeah, the artillery were gods until bombers came out.
Yeah, anytime I got artillery before another civ, if they were on my border, they could kiss their, you know, kiss the world goodbye. That was the end of them.
Resources. Not much to say other than we know that there is salt as a luxury, apparently. There is copper as some type of resource. The suspected pig resource turns out to be truffles, and we don't know what the stats are on it yet, but apparently crabs are coming back.
Yay, crabs are coming back. Wait, did you see your doctor today?
No, to say, insert juvenile joke here.
Yeah.
I miss announcing to my friends, guys, I have crabs at the beginning of games.
Otherwise, in diplomacy, you'll need to establish an embassy to get defensive pacts, open borders, and once you have an embassy, you'll be able to see the other civilization's capital, and as I guess they would be able to see yours as well, which I could see being really beneficial in the early game. Okay, I just met you. You came from what direction? Okay, can we establish an embassy? Great. You're all the way over there. Now I know where to go to meet you.
Yeah, I mean, it's also good for exploration. AI civs might not be the best explorers on the planet, but if you know what direction they came from, it's a good bet that the runes and other stuff is in the opposite direction.
Although, if it's anything like Civ 3's embassies, you're not going to be spamming them around too much too early, just because they used to cost about 100 gold apiece to establish, so they might again.
Yeah, we don't know what it's going to take for you to establish an embassy, whether it's just I'll put an embassy in your capital if you put one in mine, or there's a cost involved to one or the other. But the fact that you can see the other civ's capital, I think the benefit is actually earlier on than later on.
Yeah, likely. And just to be clear, just in case people think you can actually see the capital, you just know where it is on the map. You don't actually get to see in it.
Presumably, it's like
presumably
where you get the fog of war. It's almost like you drop the unit in their capital and then it disappears. You know, you just get to see it in the immediate environs, and then it's in fog.
But cost-wise, I mean, it's in the trades menu, so it's either going to work like a defensive pack where you have to have it up on both sides, or it'll act like open borders where you can sell it or buy it. It is in there, at the very least. We don't know how it specifically works yet, but it's not like it's something like Declaration of Friendship where you go to an external menu rather than in the trade screen.
It seems like an extension of what we found out before where you have to be friends with a civilization before you can enter into a research agreement, which of course is farther down the line from this, which is back a little bit, which is you want a defensive pact, you want open borders, but we need to establish an embassy first.
Yeah, I need to know if I like you.
Or at least not hate you too much.
True.
Some of the other just miscellaneous info was actually a fair bit we found out about religion. We'll come back to that. I just like the miscellaneous information because this really demonstrates just how want we are for any kind of information. It seems we now get era-dependent advisors because some screenshots show them with other art. Reminded me of Civilization II, actually, and the High Council, and how some, not all, but some of the leaders would change as time went on. The military advisor in particular.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, I think there was actually a thread someone started on Civ Fanatics with art assets that didn't make it into the final game, and I think one of them was era-dependent advisors, and everyone was like, why isn't this in the game if it's in the files? So it's good that they're actually putting it in the game.
And female leaders will not get male titles. You now see Lady Catherine instead of Lord Catherine in-game, and I'm thinking, wow, we are starved for... Like, really, really, I approve of this minutia.
It's the little things that matter, but big things are better.
Absolutely.
Speaking of minutia, there is a 4-page discussion on CFC alone on what the change in appearance of trading posts means. What does this mean? Does this mean we're going to have trading posts like in Civilization 4? Well, that must be the reason why, because the trading posts are going back to Civilization 4. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
It means that the trading posts look different.
Yes, exactly.
Wait a minute, you have to have Civ 4 to use trading posts? Trading posts are going back to Civ 4? They're like, screw this game, I'm going to go back there.
I think that's what they're saying, because I don't recall there being trading posts per se in Civ 4 at all.
No, not actually, no, that's right, not at all.
Yeah, well, they're trying to get at the cottage industry.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's part of what people are implying, is that they're going to be like cottages now.
I think that's the wrong mechanic for Civ 5. Civ 5 doesn't really bode well for that style of mechanic of something that gets better slowly over time, because it's so easy to just walk in and village.
Yeah, that's true. It's certainly easier than it was in Civ 4.
Yeah. Plus, they've already got systems where individual techs automatically upgrade them, like economics and vanilla. Plus, you could always put in social policies, like the one in rationalism. So, since they've already got mechanics in social policies and in the tech tree, I really don't see them saying, you know what, that was dumb, let's not do that again, and then change it back to Civ 4. I don't see that as a viable design strategy.
Yeah, I don't either, honestly. And the whole improvements getting better with certain texts or policies or whatever isn't new to the Civ franchise, but it's a good dynamic all the same, because it'll affect your teching choices to some degree if you want to take advantage of that. And like you said, with the pillaging mechanic as it is, I mean, unless you could repair them back to full strength, like, immediately, I don't know.
Plus, in Civ 5, we do spam TPs all over puppets.
That's true. I remember the speculation about that. Everyone figured it was a wonder, because they were like, there's no way something that colorful and goofy-looking would be a normal terrain improvement.
Yeah, they wouldn't use that.
No way.
With religion, now getting back to that, we've known for a while about the Pantheon beliefs and the founder beliefs and the follower beliefs, and we've been through those. But now we know about, well, at least some of the enhancer beliefs, which if you actually get to that point, 9, which is a shame because there's not 10, I can't make a supposed top 10 list, which is terrible. I'll get over it.
Who knows? Just like usual, there could be more.
There could be more. Before the game even comes out, I'm sure there's some people already saying, this is better than this, or this is better than that. I think it's better just to try to talk about them in general terms, and even that's difficult, especially before the expansion's released. But we're going to do it anyway, because we love speculation, and we love hearing ourselves talk, as we've said before on the show. Defender of the Faith, plus 20% combat near friendly cities that follow this religion. I could definitely see usefulness for that when you're going on the defensive as well as the offensive. Rather than going to the AI, you could say, hey, AI, I declare on you, why don't you come closer to me, to my cities?
Yeah, and then there are a few instances, at least, that have occurred in my Civ 5 games where me and some allied country would like be at war with a larger, more frightening power. And since it's friendly cities, not just your cities, you know, if you've got a friend who's your religion, you can send your armies over there, help them out, and get your 20% combat bonus.
Yeah.
If you have some tradition, and you have some pretty impressive combat bonuses there in your own territory, as long as you have a religion.
Culture games, you're rarely going to be running around the map destroying everybody. Usually they come to you. So a little bonus, defending yourself.
50% bonus is not small. Certainly not.
Well, you have to adjust making sure that, you know, you do spread the religion.
That's true.
And to know that it's an enhancer belief, so you're not going to be able to have that boom instantly. It's not like it's a pantheon belief or even a founder belief. It'll come later, assuming you get to that point. Holy Order, missionaries and inquisitors cost 30% less faith. And, of course, missionaries go in and spread your religion, and inquisitors, as the name implies, helps remove them. So I guess it will cost you 30% less faith to build one or the other if you choose this enhancer religion. I guess that depends, at that point, how much more you want to spread your religion. What does that 30% actually mean? What does that translate into number of turns based on the amount of faith that it would take to build a missionary or an inquisitor in the first place? I think that has its place, although I'm not as instantly keen about it as I am as defender of the faith.
I think that's actually going to be one of the go-to enhancers for the Byzantines, because they're getting extra bonuses, and a lot of these bonuses are like plus one culture for every 5 followers in other civs. And so if you're the Byzantines and you have an extra belief that gets extra bonuses based on who else has your religion, spreading your faith during that mid-late game phase is actually going to still be very useful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the enhancer beliefs are, just looking at the list, they're basically all about how you spread. I mean, you still have Defender of the Faith and some of the other ones that Dan hasn't mentioned yet. But looking at the list, it's almost about how do you do that. And there's at least 3 different ways that I can see on how you do that. So I guess it's going to come down to how much faith do you have. A 30% discount on anything is still a 30% discount. You can buy more. And if you can buy more, that means you can spread more. And definitely, like with the Byzantines, I mean, if you happen to take the one belief that gives you science every time you spread with a missionary, well, 30% less faith to buy the missionary means more science that you're going to get because you're going to be spamming them.
You're talking about Defender of the Faith. There's also the Converse, Just War, plus 20% combat near enemy cities that follow this religion. I can see that being useful, too. I must admit, that I just gave that a smile.
Hi, we come in peace. Here, have our religion. Those guys? Yeah, they don't come in peace.
Yeah, it almost that seems like one of the favorite enhancers of, like, a person who doesn't actually really want to spread their religion anymore. Like, they're like, I'm done with this. I'm going to go take all the cities that already have it.
looking at the list, maybe there's something that we don't see yet, but... You know, Defender of the Faith, you get 20% combat bonus near friendly cities that follow the religion. Just War, 20% combat bonus near enemy cities that follow this religion. Where's my enhancer bonus that gives me a combat bonus near enemy cities that don't follow your religion? That's the one I want.
Seems like that would need to be a little bit lower in the percentage bonus, but it would definitely be something you'd want.
We mentioned Holy Order. Missionaries and Inquisitors costing 30% less faith. Kind of complementary to that, there's missionary zeal, missionary conversion strength plus 25%.
Yep.
If the city doesn't have a religion already, then if that's what you're thinking looking on the map, then I guess Holy Order would make more sense.
Let's say you founded a religion and some other civ near you did, and you're both competing over a third religion, trying to get them to follow you. If your missionaries are just better than theirs, that would be the best enhancer belief probably to have at that point.
Yeah, it's kind of like, do you want more but slightly less powerful, or do you want less but more powerful? We'd have to see if these are balanced, like if that 25% strength bonus is balanced versus 30% less for total numbers across for conversions. But it's pretty much that. It's like, how many do you want to convert? If you need to go into another civ that has a religion, then definitely missionary zeal. But if, I think as Dan already said, if you're just putting your religion on the map and people don't have one, then Holy Order is probably better.
The missionary zeal is probably a lot better if you're trying to fight over city-states, too. Presumably you can't just have, like, 3 missionaries in one city or something, in which case having one strong one would be best if you are limited in the number that you're allowed to have affecting any one city.
Yeah, and presumably you can't inquisit other civs or city-states. Send your people off to kill them.
That wouldn't go over well in real life.
Probably not.
But at the same time, there's also Messiah, where prophets are 25% stronger and earned with 25% less faith. And we know, at least, now this is from screenshot analysis, but anyway, great prophets apparently come at 200 faith, and the special ability of this great person is that he can spread his religion to a maximum of 4 cities. Now, it's true that what that faith number means in context is not known, but if you know that a great prophet can spread a religion to 4 cities, presumably they can do more than what a missionary can spread. If you know that you could get this enhancer belief and then 25% stronger, so take that then and add 25% to it, and it's earned with 25% less faith, certainly for the spreading or getting back something that was taken from you in terms of a religion in the city that was yours and is now a different religion, the fact that the prophet is stronger and is earned with less and can do more and can spread more sounds very powerful, certainly in comparison to these other two.
Yeah, and also the part you missed, at least in the news item, is the great prophet also removes the influence of other religions at the same time. So not only do you have a power of spread for the missionary, but you get a built-in inquisitor, and you can do it 4 times. And according to the news article, it's only missionaries spread to 2 times and with half the pressure. So prophets are powerful. Presumably, missionaries and inquisitors are a lot cheaper than prophets.
It is implied you can't build a prophet. You just get one when you hit a certain faith threshold.
Well, you can build holy sites, so it's kind of the question of, you know, okay, you need, what, 2 prophets to get your whole religion? And then you still have holy sites to build and or using them for spread. So obviously there's some sort of mechanic to get more prophets after you get your religion going. It'll probably determine, you know, how cheap are the prophets versus how cheap are the missionaries or inquisitors, and just kind of play a balance game in there to see which ones you want to actually get.
Yeah, it sounds like patience would be rewarded waiting for a great prophet to come around again. But depending upon the circumstance, you may decide that, no, I actually don't want to wait that long. I want to spread it now because of the other beliefs that are already associated with your religion. You want to get that benefit now, whatever that circumstance happens to be.
Yeah, and then they're still building.
Yes. Which ones haven't we talked about? I wouldn't say that these are less interesting, but I guess just less to say about right now, at least from my perspective. Iterant preachers. Religion spreads to cities 30% further away. And part of that is because, well, I don't think we know right now what that 30% means. Is 30% more than what? I don't think we know the what yet, do we?
Somebody on Sith Fanatics, I can't give you a link, but I think they said 10. 10 hexes.
So now it's 13. Well,
we'd also need to know if it's spider webs or if it's just like a linear thing. Say it spreads to your neighboring civ. Is it then 10 more hexes from that civ, or does it only count your territory, or does it only count your founding city? Like,
or how does it spread?
Yeah.
Does it spread more when you build temples and shrines, or does it spread more when you sign up a holy site, or stuff like that? We don't really know what the spread mechanic is. So 30% more seems good. If you're on an islands map, you're not exactly going to be jamming your cities in, so further away could help.
Oh, well, but when we get the second expansion pack and we get the underwater cities, you'll be saying something different.
Yeah.
So speaking of spreads, interesting then, religious texts. Religion spreads 34% faster, 68% with printing press. And actually, my first reaction was 34%. Well, what's with not ending with a 5 and a 0? It's just not as impressive.
Maybe they were going to do, like, 1/3 faster, and then they were like, what are we going to do? Put, like, we're all in percentages. We have to do it, like, some percentage. 34.
Because running 33.333333333333333 doesn't work.
If you put enough 3s in there, it gets to 3.4, right?
Yeah.
Religion spreads to friendly city-states at double rate. Religious unity? Okay, well, first off, you need to be friendly with those city-states. And then, again, we don't know about the spreading mechanics, so at double rate, you know, it's almost not so much a negative against that one in terms of it's what it does absolutely or also not knowing, but it's also in comparison to what the other enhancer beliefs are. It's just, in terms of versatility, it just doesn't seem as enticing.
Well, I guess it's kind of one of those that it seems okay on the face of it, but it's not like the awesome one. But that's the same as what's all the other beliefs and everything else in the game. A lot of the social policies seem okay on the face of them, but some are better than others. So I think this is kind of one of those. Except the question is it a friendly city-state? As in its demeanor is friendly instead of being hostile or neutral or irrational? Or is it a friendly city-state as in you're friends with it?
Friendly isn't capitalized, so maybe it doesn't have to be a formal friendship. Minutia. Yeah.
Yes.
Super minutia.
The one thing that does seem like it might be good about it is that given that in the screenshots we've seen, we have the city-states with kind of the four levels of friendship bar now instead of just having the fluid friendship bar. Probably one of those bars can be filled by them just being a member of a religion you founded. So probably picking that enhancer belief would make it a lot easier to keep city-state allies that have already become allies. So at least there's that going for it.
Well, I guess, again, it comes down to how much faith you have. Obviously, with pantheons, a couple of them give you lots of faith. Most of them don't. I haven't seen too many things in the game other than shrines and temples that would give you faith. So unless you're hoarding up, say, in the middle of a desert to get the desert bonus from faith, plus you happen to have a few of the new natural wonders, plus you happen to have a bunch of religious city-states, I don't see a huge volume of faith coming in per turn. So that could also be one of those reasons to take, like, itinerant creatures or religious texts or religious unity. Like, religious unity, I could see taking that with the papal primacy founder belief, if you're going to be focusing on city-states. Might make it easier to make the papal primacy work.
Oh, right, with the plus 15 influence resting with every city-state that follows that religion.
Right.
And then lastly on this list of nine, which in addition to being listed last, because alphabetically it's last, it's also kind of the one that by itself in the group, gain 50 faith each time a great person is expended. Well, first off, I guess you want to actually be ensuring that you are generating great people points already. Just a thought.
No.
No. And also, by the time you actually do that, 50 faith, since it's an absolute number, we know at the Renaissance era that the influence of religion is not as effective as it was before Renaissance, because then we get the espionage mechanic. But 50 faith earlier on would seem better than later on, and seeing as how this is an enhancer belief combined with all of the other eight choices, it seems to be the most underwhelming to me.
I think that, though there is a good point, that there aren't a lot of ways that we've seen to bring in faith points every turn. And given that, it could very well be the case that faith points don't kind of build up, like, exponentially the way other points do as you grow your empire, in which case having some flat 50 might be pretty good.
Yeah, but I kind of agree with Dan on that one, though. You don't generally start doing mass production or even little production of great people until the Renaissance or later. So really, it's a boost for the industrial era plus that you're going to start getting extra faith, realistically. And if religion's falling off and or things get more expensive, yada yada, that might be a bit hard. But then again, the social policy trees that you pick let you buy great people with faith, depending on which one you pick. So that actually might be a good storage mechanic. By the time you're done spreading your faith and you've kind of given up on the religion thing, every time you burn your great scientist or engineer or whatever, you're going to get some extra faith towards buying a new one. That might not be so bad.
Yeah, you could end up almost kind of buying into more, you know, because like every faith point gets you closer to your next great profit, too. So you get 50 faith toward your next great profit, you get 50 faith you could potentially spend on a great person, and you get 50 faith toward whatever else faith does that we don't know yet.
I think it was you earlier mentioned that when it comes to the previews, that we look more at the screenshots and look more at maybe what's coming from 2K and Firaxis as opposed to those who are writing these previews and what they have to say. Because now a lot of these previews that generate a lot of this information, they're play previews. So in other words, the people who are writing these articles for these assorted sites, they're not just taking speaking points and press releases and saying, okay, here's what we've been told. These are people who have played some of the game, and from what I have read, we're looking at somewhere between 10 and 15 hours, for those who actually admit how many hours they've played, and one person in particular said that their playable build only went to the Renaissance. The person on GameSpy, Mike Nelson, said, espionage reinvents diplomacy in Civ 5.
Yeah.
Apparently the playable version only goes to the Renaissance. I don't know how you know this.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I think that statement was for shock value to get people to read the preview and get page views and get ad views. Sorry. It got my attention, don't get me wrong, but then I went, Wait a minute.
Wait, you're full of crap. Oh, I already knew that.
And he does also say, what doesn't faith do in Gods and Kings? It's such a new useful device that it's difficult to shoehorn into one simple explanation. How Firaxis is going to balance all of these different traits is mind-boggling, but I am digging deep and involved it is in the preview build. Okay, that last sentence, that I can agree with. I found something to agree with.
Excellent. So we're all in agreement.
Yes.
One big happy family.
Yeah, exactly.
Valid. Ha, cool.
And then the only other preview that I saw that had really anything interesting being said by the previewers, and I know interesting varies from person to person, but I was just skimming through the articles and I was looking for somebody saying something differently. And that doesn't mean, oh, they said the same things but used different words. No, something that was different or something that jumped out on the page. At Giant Bomb, Alex Navarro said, with regards to religion and espionage, that these two systems add a nice chunk of additional strategy to an already content-rich gameplay system. They don't completely alter the structure of the game, but rather simply provide new roadmaps to victory using the same types of strategies one would use in the original game. And those two sentences seem to kind of conflict with each other. It adds a nice chunk of additional strategy, but it doesn't alter the structure of the game. It just reinforces what we already had in Vanilla Civ 5. What?
Yay, it's new, but you can ignore it. They did nothing. They didn't change at all. They just put lipstick on a pig.
And again, your preview build went to Renaissance, so yeah. What do you really know about espionage? Stop it!
I know what they told me to say.
And then perhaps, finally, maybe with Gods and Kings, I mentioned at the very start of this that there was a video preview, and this was from Destructoid, specifically with their series called Rev 3 Games. They almost turned me off right away when they talked about how Civilization V Gods and Kings was the next expansion for Civ 5. I guess they don't know the difference between downloadable content and an expansion pack, but I thought, okay. Now, female co-host and a male co-host, they were bringing somebody else on to talk about Gods and Kings, and I thought that this was kind of a humorous introduction about why they were bringing somebody else onto the show to talk about this expansion.
Civilization V, Gods and Kings. Max and I are far too pretty and stupid to understand. Thankfully, our producer Zach is a huge nerd, and he's gotten some time to play with the preview build for a couple weeks now.
Yay.
Don't you just love when video game reviewers don't consider themselves huge nerds?
Why are you there?
No, it's a trend. You see it a lot. It's like, you see some that are like, oh, I'm a big nerd and I actually play these games so that I know what I'm talking about. And then you have people like this who are like, let's put pretty-ish people in front of people on YouTube so that people will show up and watch. But then, yeah, they know crap. Or they know, like, casual games or shooters because, you know, that's the cool thing.
Well, we got the video view, we got the ad view, whatever. We're good to go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, not that I have a lot of room to talk here, but, like, I don't think either of them were quite attractive enough to just be the token cute person.
When you don't pay, you don't get.
The whole video that this preview was in was about 18 minutes, and they spent about 5 minutes, I think it was the last item in the video, talking about Civilization V Gods and Kings. And I did listen to it, and there was some other friendly bashing of the nerdiness that was this person. I kind of half rolled my eyes with it. The only thing that he said new, and I think this comes under the speculation column, but has to do with individual spies.
You have an espionage panel, and you get up to 3 different spies.
This is the first time I've heard that you get up to 3 different spies, and that's it. And I'm thinking, where did that come from? Especially when, again, your build only went to the Renaissance when espionage is introduced. How do you know these things?
They talk to the member talking points.
Oh, right.
Yeah, just like the Korea's a new DLC. There's a new Civ in the game. and other such fun.
You know how ridiculous Korea is.
As far as this person who, again, was being interviewed and had played this game, the following statement that he made in terms of who this is going to interest, this sounds reasonable, although not surprising.
If you like Civilization V, it's a definite pickup, I would say. Mm-hmm. If you are not into Civilization, like you two, it's probably not going to break you into the game.
Really?
Impact for existing game, not likely to bring people who don't already play the game into the game.
Let me get this straight. It's unlikely that you're going to draw people into a game by adding more complexity on top of it?
Huh.
No. You get good reviews and then people play it, but whatever. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It does happen. And besides, there's still a few holdouts from Civ 4 that are waiting to see if Gods and Kings makes Civ 5 playable.
Yeah, yeah, that's certainly true. A multi-Civ fan site democracy game forming. This is Game 3, apparently. Good friend 2 Metro Ninja has been in contact with the Bulletin. It's something that I'm considering hopping on a team, maybe not as a player, but as somebody with strategy suggestions and possible routes we could go, a little bit of military planning, because this looks like it'll be an interesting game.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely see it. Different people cluster in the different forums, and that means unless you have people who are reading all of the different forums, they're not seeing all the different meta strategies that are being talked about. So it'd be kind of cool to keep an eye on, see what happens.
Absolutely. The multiplayer guys have their own spin on things, and they're perhaps a bit more experienced when it comes to preparing for a game like this, especially if they disable tech trade, then the multiplayer community probably has a better idea in terms of how to play these games out. And this should be very, very amusing, this particular matchup. So who's representing We Play Civ, anyway?
We are.
Dan, we'll put Dan up front.
Dan, yeah, you and I want to go like that. We'll take on teams of like 18 players, just you and me. Yeah. Maybe Matthew
and Lisa, if they're
interested, yeah.
Well, you know, I might. I haven't done a democracy game in a long time.
Podcast, this is everyone. That wouldn't end well.
I'll go get my pom-poms.
With that, we need people to object and go, no, you're being stupid. That's not the way to do it. We need to do this, this, and this. No, we should go to war with them. No, we should make peace. Oh, boy, democracy games.
Well, I was about to say, wait a minute, Mackie. Why are you talking about real life right now? We're talking about a game.
Yeah, it's not too much different.
The stages are getting set up, and there is a link to the thread if you really probably for most of these sites, definitely on the Bulletin, you can take a look at that and consider signing up or following the game. Aside from that, I mean, I don't know that the rules are even set at this point. You probably have a lot of your basic stuff, like, you know, double moving or whatever. I think a lot of it's still up for debate. We'll find out.
From the Polish Civ community, and they're trying to get some people from the Russian Civ community to also play, so this is setting up to be one of, if not the largest, multi-Civ fan site democracy games.
Thorin Johnson is working on a very, very, very secret project, so don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. I mean, this isn't going to be posted on the internet or anything like that, right? Apparently, Thorin Johnson left Electronic Arts to join Zynga to start working on a social gaming project. As you know, Zynga is a social gaming company, mostly focusing on those wonderful, wonderful Facebook games. I think all of us really love Facebook games a lot, especially Dan.
Obviously. That goes without saying, Lisa. Why would you say that?
I know, I really don't know why I said that. I just, you know, I just felt the need to express how much you love Facebook games, you know. Because sometimes you don't express that, and, you know, I felt like I had to express it for you.
Yeah, by the way, guys, I'm looking for a lawnmower, a lighter, and a bowler hat. So if you have any of those items, just send them on over to my Facebook.
Soren is not the first person involved in the Civilization franchise to now find themselves at Zynga. I think it's a coordinated effort from that company. It's the Civ Suck. That's the term I'm giving it.
That's their new game. Wow.
I mean, I really hope it's not going to be another Civ World. Soren's too good for that, I hope.
Do we need more people at Zynga? Come on, guys. I know he can make good things, and maybe he can... There's too many social games. I've had to block so many off of Facebook. Stop spamming me. I love you guys, my friends. They're on there. But stop spamming me with this crap. you casual gamers, you.
But I need a lawnmower. Give me your lawnmower.
Go to Home Depot.
Basically, the reaction on the Fanatics is overwhelmingly negative, let's say. R. Rolo says, you know, they're all falling to the dark side of the force. First Brian Reynolds, then Sid, now Soren. Ah!
Brian Reynolds was the lead designer on Civilization II. He was at Big Huge Games, which did Rise of Nations, which is essentially Civ in real time. Civ for the time, you know, as compared to a Civilization II or a Civilization III. And Tim Train, who was at Zynga, he's the Zynga East General Manager, and apparently that's where Soren is now working, and Tim Train was also at Big Huge Games. And, of course, the reference to Sid in that post was the Civilization World Facebook game, originally called Civilization Network. And this article finally spills the beans that more than 6 months ago, September of last year, that Soren joined Zynga to work on this secret project. And I can't believe it's going to be a Civ competitor directly, only in the sense that it kind of did that already with Empires and Allies.
Yeah, that's what they tried, but it wasn't Civ-like. It was Civ-ville, just with units. But, yeah. No. I don't know what to say on this. I mean, he did the Dragon Age Legends or whatever, the Facebook/Google+ Flash game. That wasn't bad, but I can't see them trying to do similar for Civ. I mean, you know, Civ World went oh so well, and these are from the makers of Civ, who actually know how to make strategy games, I hope. So I'm not sure how well Zynga is going to do. I mean, it's not like they actually make games. They just make things for you buy.
They copy other people's games and then try to get you to pay money for them.
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
I know a lot of people can make the argument that how many original ideas are there really in gaming, that people just take ideas from each other all the time, and Zynga isn't any different. I will say, though, that the only reason I find this interesting, because it's Soren Johnson, who was the lead designer on Civilization IV, obviously felt strong enough about this to leave Electronic Arts, where, of course, he worked on Spore, which wasn't exactly as well received as Civilization IV, but not exactly as decried as, say, Civilization World continues to be. Because it's Soren Johnson, I am interested in learning more about it, and as interesting as this interview was, I think it went on a little long. It was a little PR-ish, very vague assertions, statements that, you know, stuff like, I expect Civ fans will be absolutely interested in my current project. In fact, I anticipate them to be among the first wave of players to try out the game. Why don't we wait and see, once you actually give us some information on the game and then wait for reaction, then maybe you could tell us that. It seems a bit presumptuous.
What? Marketing crap interviews are completely obfuscated? No. They don't actually intend to say anything. And if you deconstruct what he said, he figures that Civ players will be the first ones to try the game, but he didn't say anything about Civ players will be the ones continuing to play the game.
I expect that Civ players will be the first ones to try and abandon the game.
I actually would try to just try out the game, you know, just because Soren Johnson is on it, but then, you know, that's what I did for Civ World, because Sid Meier was on it, and, well, you know what happened with that.
Player retention is pretty darn important. In a way, especially for these type of games that have a model that is based on, rather than paying up front, we want you to, you know, suck you into the game, and then you're paying us month after month after month, presumably towards that kind of model. Or if you're not, that you're coming back to the game day after day after day to look at more of our ads, or both. Or microtransactions for other odds and ends, which we've also talked about on this show, which can be precarious.
I think the bottom line, though, is that there's no way it could possibly be as disappointing as Spore was.
Maybe. It is Zynga.
True. But I don't have my hopes up, whereas with Spore, I did.
True.
So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what's more on this. It's building anticipation, and in fact, it may be strategic why they didn't discuss the game, because then maybe they figured people wouldn't pay attention to it anymore. But I will admit, I'm intrigued to actually learn more about the game, so in that respect, that was a marketing win.
Well, if they tell us about the game now, we wouldn't want to play it, because we'd be like, oh, that's what you're doing? Yeah, no.
There's a part of me that would like to not feel so negative towards social gaming, and he actually makes the argument that we shouldn't talk about social gaming versus other gaming, because gaming in general, because it's becoming more multiplayer, because it's more community interaction between fans and developers, that all gaming is becoming social. I'm thinking, part of me wants to believe, but then at the other time, no, I don't want to believe, and I don't think you want that either.
No, that's what the loser in the corner who pretends to be something that he isn't says. It's not, hey, look, I'm a professional athlete. I can be a professional athlete, too. I just don't get paid. I'm not on a team. But, you know, I'm a professional athlete, too. Just stop making fun of me for being an athlete. I just suck. It's the same thing.
One could make the argument that a lot of these social games aren't even games the same way that, you know, the games we play are. You know, there's no clear-cut objective. Just a set of rules almost floating in space. And then you just kind of gather things.
Yeah.
In his interview, Soren says, most importantly, the game is one that actually ends with real winners and real losers. That's a big departure from Zynga, but it's a necessary element for many types of strategy games.
Yeah, if they do something the way StarCraft II works, there's seasons. I mean, somebody can get up to the Diamond or Masters or what have you in one season, but the next season they might not get up there. So, you know, if they're ranking players in this new game, even if they win a bunch of things, you know, the next go-around or the next round of games, they might not do as well. And that would be better than this infinite Farmville crap.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Wait a minute. I think I've just come to a revelation. Real life is a Facebook game. No clear objective, just a set of rules floating in space. Everyone's trying to just get more stuff from each other.
And if you spend plenty of money, you can get ahead.
Except it ends.
Before you're through with the game.
Well, it ends when you stop playing.
Well, who's taking money off of life, though? I mean, Mark Zuckerberg is taking money off of Facebook. Who's taking money off of life? Please don't say God.
I think God started the Ponzi scheme.
Or the corporations.
Well, this has been Polycast number 147. You have been joined here by our regular co-host, Dan Quick.
Polycast is priceless.
Mark Lua.
So is my caffeine.
Phil.
See what happens here, Sis.
Been joined by our guest, Mad Jim.
Zinger or crap in a hat. One of these two things is enjoyable.
Do you mind there?
And Peng T. I hope I said that right. Peng T. Yeah.
Peng Where T. am I and how did I get here?
And of course myself. Hiyo.
The Celts also get a unique building. I didn't look up how to pronounce this properly. It's not celluloid, obviously. Why do I think that when I see that? Cillid Hall? That doesn't sound right still.
Don't feel too bad. Gaelic is impossible to pronounce.
Okay, the C letters follow Hall. Eyes unlocked.
Just to help you out. It's pronounced K.
See? You can't pronounce it. It's not possible.
So basically, all of the reactions are like that. Oh my god, somebody posted a really nasty picture. Ew. Anyway.
The dangers of reading threat out loud. Now that you've been a guest on the show, would you be willing to come back?
Oh yeah, sure.
Oh, we didn't scare you away. Well, we'll do better next time.
No, I was trying to scare you away.
Oh.
Record date, May 19th, 2012. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.